The year was 1852 in Washington, D.C. Thousands of people had lined the streets. There, very prominent, was the President of the United States with his hat over his heart and his head bowed. His cabinet was there that day. The House of Representatives were there that day. The U.S. Senate was there that day. There were dignitaries there from Berlin, from London, from Turkey, and from Africa. The crowd, 1852, was incredible. And here comes a casket being pulled down Pennsylvania Avenue, draped with American flag. You say, who was this man that all of these people had come out to pay their respects? He had never been elected to office. He was poor. He served in a low government post. They buried him in Tripoli. Upon news of their death, they dug him up and shipped him back to America. You say, who was this guy? Probably most of you in this room have never heard of him. His name was John Howard Payne. You say, who's that? Why did they honor him such, and why was he loved and so known? Why all the expense? Well, John Howard Payne wrote a few lines in a poem that had touched all of their lives and probably have touched yours. The lines in that poem were these: mid pleasures and palaces, though oft we may roam, be it ever so humbled, there's, help me out,
no place like home.
You've heard it as well. And for that, they honored him and they showed their respect. The home is under attack today like never before. There is a generation gap that is as large as I think possibly that has ever been. This week during Bible school, you had all of these young ladies and men. They were up here leading the kids in worship. And every one of them on this one night that I noticed, every one of them but one had torn holes in their britches. Now, when I was a kid, we patched holes in our britches, and now they're tearing holes in their britches. As a parent, your job is difficult, and it's as challenging as it has ever been. A woman was asked, if you had to do it all over again, would you have kids? She says, oh, yes, just not the same ones. My mother probably said that about my brother. The greatest need in America is for every child to be raised by godly parents. So we come to Psalm 127 and we say, how are we supposed to do this? Psalm 127 tells us how God would have us do this. It's the Psalms of Ascent, and this one was attributed to Solomon. The man who built God's temple reminds us that the greatest building project ever known is not a temple and it's not a palace. It's a home. So this morning, notice five keys. If you're going to be successful as a parent, five keys to successful parenting. In a sermon I've entitled, There's No Place Like Home. First truth, notice this. The protector of the home, Psalm 127, verse 1. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. So there's two pictures that he gives us in this verse. The first is a builder constructing a house. The second one is a watchman who is guarding the city. Both are working diligently, But neither one of them can be successful without God's help. So it is with parenting. You can be the greatest parent in the history of the world, but if you don't have God helping you and you raising those children, you will be a failure. Parents can't protect their children from all of the enemies that are out there to attack your children. You can childproof your house. You can monitor their friends. You can control their internet exposure. You can choose what school they go to. All of these things are good things, but all of these things are not enough. You say, why not? Because you can't be with them all the time. But God can. Psalm 121 says, he neither slumbers nor he sleeps. So it is a partnership. You raise and you commit to raise your children the way God says you should raise your children. And you say, God, I'm fallen. I cannot raise these children without your help. And I need you to fill in the gaps, to fill in the spaces where I miss. Remember Moses? His mother hid him in the house for 3 months. But he was noisy and it was illegal to have these baby boys. So what did she do? She put him in an ark of bulrushes, in the Nile River, with alligators, with snakes, with a whole lot of praise. But she didn't put him in that Nile River all by himself. The Lord was watching over him. Interestingly enough, the river that she feared most became the avenue that God used to place her son in the palace. And a lot of times, those things that we fear, God will use them as a stepping stone when we are in partnership with Him. Parents, it's your job to recognize your limitations, that you cannot be the parents your children need without God. And you cry out every morning, God, you're going to have to help me. God, you're going to have to give me wisdom. God, I want godly children. And I want successful children. And I want faithful children. But without you, I can't pull it off. You need God's help. It would be like this. The carpenter and the wind. A carpenter can build the greatest sailboat in all the world. He can shape every board meticulously. Oh, he can construct the mast so that you rig it up flawlessly. But he puts that boat in the water. Pardon my grammar. It ain't going nowhere without wind. So he does his part and he leans on the Lord. Lord, you're going to have to move this ship. That is the job of the parent. You are working every day with the Lord. How would you have me raise these children? Hey, how would you have me help my parents raise these children as a grandparent? God, what do you want me to do? I'm not with them all the time. I only get them this much time. It's a partnership with the Lord, the protector of the heart of the home. Secondly, notice the pressure in the home. Look at verse 2. It's vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sheep. One of the greatest enemies of parenting is anxiety. It's worry. We worry about their health. We worry about their friends. We worry about their future. We worry about their education. We worry about their marriage. Who are they going to marry? Is she going to be Attila the Hun? Is she going to be a Jezebel? We worry about their salvation. Jesus asked this question. Which of you can add a cubit to his stature by taking thought? And the answer is none of us. Worry changes nothing. Look at verse 2 again. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late. Notice this phrase. To eat the bread of sorrows. Imagine you get up this morning, instead of going downstairs to eat your little Pop-Tart or your Captain Crunch, you say, hey, I want two eggs of worry over easy. I don't like it hard. Lunchtime, I want some sorrowful soup. Hey, supper, that's what he's talking about. Eating the bread of sorrow when we worry, it does absolutely nothing. It just puts us on that little mouse's wheel where we run and run and run and we get nowhere. I don't know if this has ever happened to you. In my earlier driving days, not that Tracy hasn't done it, my mother would be riding with me in the passenger seat. I have the steering wheel, I have the gear shift, I have the gas pedal, and I have the brake. My mother did not have the steering wheel. She didn't have the whatever that thing is. She didn't have the gas pedal, and she didn't have the brake. But you wouldn't know her by the way she was sitting there. Mom, what's up? Mom, you got a cramp in your leg? No, you need to slow down. It did her no good, did me a lot of bad, because I'm getting worried over her actions. So it is with parenting. When you're worrying, when you're stressing, when you're anxious, pray. Be anxious for nothing, but everything by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known unto God. God wants your kids to turn out to love him more than you do. So you say, God, I've done the best I can with these grandkids. Now I need you to help me out a lot. Number two, the pressure in the home. Number three, notice the prosperity of the home. Look at verse 3. Children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. Now, our culture says children are an expense. Children are a burden. God calls them an inheritance. God calls them a reward. God calls them a blessing. Solomon does not say children become a blessing once they behave. Once they graduate from high school and college, then they're a blessing. Who is this? They are a blessing. The word heritage literally speaks of an inheritance entrusted to someone. So God has given you his inheritance and placed that child, placed that grandchild, literally placed that niece or nephew in some situations under your sphere of influence for you to take care of his inheritance the way he would have you to do. Many parents spend their years as parenting, wishing for another season. Now, come on, you don't have to raise your hand. But some of you have thought, I'll be glad when this diaper season is over. It wasn't that hard on me, the diapers. It was really bad on Tracy, but I was glad to see those days gone. I'll be glad when these kids get out of elementary school. I can't wait till these kids start driving so I don't have to haul them all over the place. We wish the season away, only to one day miss the season when they're gone. One father put it like this: the days are long, but the years are short. If you are in that diaper phase, pull you out a hanky and just wave it. Say, man, it stinks around here and our trash is loaded up. But God has blessed and I'm going to enjoy this season because it's a gift from God. Hey, if they're not driving yet, or if they are and your insurance has just gone through the roof, say, this too shall pass. And God has promised to provide all of our needs according to His. God, this is partnership, and I'm broke. So I need to pray for this. Someone put it like this. This week, they were in my office. They didn't know what I was preaching on. This is what she said. She says, my daddy told me when I was a young parent. He said, enjoy those kids. You only have them for 18 summers. Make every summer memorable. So they take those summers with them for the rest of their lives. The prosperity of the home. The number one job a parent, a grandparent, an aunt or uncle has is to direct your children spiritually. You say, I don't get them that much. If you get them 2 minutes a year, do everything you can to have a ball of a time and to plant Jesus in their heart. That is your job. Remember Hannah? Couldn't have children. She says, God, if you'll give me a child, I'll give him back to you. God did, and she did. She poured Jesus into that little young child as much as she could, and she gave him back to the Lord to serve him. She understood. This child is not mine. He belongs to God. God has just entrusted his inheritance to me. So I'm going to raise this children as this child as God would have me. Number three, the prosperity of the home. Let me say it again for all of our young people. Have a lot of babies. Have a lot of babies and have a lot of grandbabies. Grandbabies are a whole lot easier, I think, than babies. Number four. Notice the plan of the home, and I want to get in your business on this one, if I can, a little bit. Look at verse 4. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. He compares children to arrows, like bow and arrow. He doesn't compare them to ornaments. He doesn't compare them to trophies. He doesn't compare them to collectibles. Arrows have one purpose, to hit the target every single time. And God has entrusted you with children. Why? So they will hit the target. What's the target? Loving Jesus and following him. Now let's think about the arrow for a second. Arrows must be shaped. First thing an archer does is to the arrow. He's got to remove all of the imperfections in that arrow. Well, you say, how does he do it? You pull off the leaves. You smooth down the snags. You straighten the bend so it's straight so it hits the target. How's a parent supposed to do it? I mean, I'm going to answer you straight up. And it's not a politically correct answer. Your job as parents is to polish your children to remove their imperfections. You say, how do we do it? One word. Discipline. Proverbs 22, verse 15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. God is our best example in this. No one loves us more than God does. He gave his very son on behalf of us. But no one lays out clear expectations and guidelines and consequences than God does if we don't follow through on his rules. Folks, let me just say it straight up. If you allow your kids to do their own thing, you don't love your kids. You say, where do you get off on saying that? Proverbs 13, verse 24. He that spares the rod hates his son. He that loveth him chastens him. And it says, betimes, it means over and over and over again. First three are out of the house. last two are still in the house. Something I've said to every one of them every day and sometimes multiple times to the boys. Have you cleaned your room? Have you cleaned your room? And this is where I really get their attention. Are you ready for me to go inspect your room? No, Dad, let me go check it one more time. You're chasing them. You correct them over and over. Why discipline? The wicked are estranged from the womb, Psalm 58, verse 3 says. They go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies. If you don't mind that your children don't mind, you know what? They won't mind. You have to. Children are to obey the parents in the Lord, for this is right. If they don't obey their parents in the Lord, it's wrong. Who's going to enforce obedience? Parents. It's your job as parents. And yes, it's tricky because you can't overstep bounds. But when they're at your house as a grandparent, it's not your job to let them, oh, I'm at grandpa's, I can do whatever I want. No, grandpa still needs to have some rules. And it shouldn't be just a spoil fest and to give them little Debbies all day long. A man was in a supermarket and he was pushing the cart. It contained the groceries and a screaming child who was throwing things and everything else. Man just kept pushing the buggy along the aisle and kept repeating softly, "It's okay, George. Stay calm, George. Don't yell, George." Another lady in the grocery store came up and says, "Sir, I am so impressed with your patience for little George." He looked at the lady and says, "Lady, I'm George." If you don't mind that your kids don't mind, they won't mind. They're arrows, and you have to teach them, we obey authority. Authority is not always right. We obey authority, period, because God tells us to. Arrows have to be shaped. Secondly, arrows have to be sharpened. Some of you are good at the first one, you're not good at the second one. Some of you are good at the second one, and you're not good at the first one. If the archer doesn't sharpen the arrow, it won't be able to make the desired impact. It's vital to build a safe atmosphere in your home where kids develop emotionally. You are either an encourager to your children, or you're a discourager to your children. You're either building your children up or you're tearing your children down. The way you teach your children is as important as what you teach your children. To accomplish the task, we got to start early. 65% of a child's vocabulary is developed by the time they're 3. 80% of a child's character is developed by the time they're 5. 90% of a child's personality is developed by the time they're 7. Number two, arrows must be sharpened. It needs to be a safe place for your child to thrive. Are there guardrails? Absolutely, there are guardrails. But it is a fun, encouraging environment where they live. Number three, arrows have to be aimed. No archer is going to take his bow and just shoot it up in the air and say, "Go wherever you want to go." No, that's dangerous. When God gave you children, he gave you arrows that you are to direct in the right direction so that they hit the target. And that is a relationship with God. You say, "How do I do that?" Number one job of every parent is to direct their children spiritually. Number one job of every grandparent, direct your children spiritually. You say, "Well, I'm not married and I don't have kids." Number one job of every aunt and every uncle, to direct your niece and your nephew spiritually. You say, how do I do it? Living it before them. Your children, your grandchildren, your niece, your nephew, they're not going to read their Bible if you don't read your Bible. They're not going to love church if you don't love church. They're not going to pray before the meal if you don't pray before the meal. They're not going to walk the walk if you don't walk the walk. In most homes, kids are launched. They're not aimed. We give them a great education, best clothes. We want to have them to have a car. We want them to go to a good place for education in college so that they can go off and succeed. The average parent does very little to direct their child spiritually. You say, what's the plan? Isaiah 38, verse 19. The father to the children shall make known thy truth. So dad, you can't say, well, that's her job. She needs to do better. Dad, you need to get them together to pray with them at night. Dad, you need to talk to them about what God's doing in your life and what you got out of your Bible. Hey, should the wife help out? Absolutely. Dad, you are the spiritual leader of your home. You need to be leading the charge. Arrows must be aimed. Let me give you one more. Arrows must be released. Many parents prepare their children well, but they won't cut the apron strings. They won't let them go. The purpose of parenting is not lifelong dependence. Oh, we got to come back to mama's house. Empty nesting is a good thing. You're to let them go. And they're not leaving you. They're following God. The job is not to, I got to go talk to dad and find out what I'm supposed to do. They need to talk to God. Yes, counsel is wonderful. It's a good thing for them to come and talk to their dad. You need to connect them to their God, because you won't always be there with them. Arrows must be released. The plan of the home. Let me give the fifth one and I'm done. Notice the prize of the home. Look at verse 5. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies. Notice these last three words, in the gate. Final picture is of a father standing confidently before the character of his kids. The city gate was where court was held. It was where business was conducted. It was where the leaders would gather. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. How is that possible? Because that parent had so shined and buffed and targeted his children so that they could go into hostile environments and hit the target. That is your job as a parent. That is your job as a grandparent. That is your job as a neighbor. That is your job as an aunt or uncle. You're not supposed to overstep your grounds. But you, those that you have influence on, you are to so shape them and show, so point them toward Jesus that they hit the mark. A godly family is to be your greatest testimony. Greatest reward of parenting is not just, well, I got all these kids. I got these kids. They're not perfect. They mess up. But they love the Lord Jesus Christ. John wrote this. No greater joy than to see my children walk in truth. He didn't say, I have no greater joy than to see my children get promotion after promotion. No, he says, no greater joy than to see my children and their rich new house and new car. Just got a new degree, huh? No greater joy than to see my children walk in truth. When your kids are 50 years old, they're not going to remember how big the TV was. They're probably not going to remember, hey, remember what kind of car dad drove? Probably not going to remember that. They will remember who prayed with them every night. They will remember who talked to them about Jesus. They would remember the one who sacrificed over and over and over just to be there for them, to speak encouragement into their lives. Your greatest legacy is not what you leave to your children. Your greatest legacy is what you leave in your children. So here's the invitation. Today, I'm asking every parent, every grandparent, every aunt or uncle to recommit. God, I got these children. I got these next door neighbor kids. I got these children. They're the future of this society. I'm recommitting myself to point them towards you. You say, well, I don't get them that much. Recommit. God, I don't have grandkids, but if you'll give me grandkids, I'll give them back to you. I'll train them in the way that they should go. And I'll do everything that I possibly can to point them toward you. Several years ago, Tracy and I were on our way to India on a mission trip. And I don't like to fly. So it just so happened that our flights, we had a layover in Paris, France. So we spent a day and a half in Paris, France. One of the places we went to, and guys, you can put it on the screen, is the Palace of Versailles. King Louis XIV built it, and it's unlike any other palace in all of the world. Some of you are thinking, how does it compare to the Biltmore Estate? I'm glad you asked that question. The Biltmore Estate has 250 rooms. Versailles has 700 rooms. Versailles has 2,100 windows. Listen to this, ladies. 67 staircases. Can you imagine sweeping the stairs in that house? 1,200 fireplaces. The garden stretched over 2,100 acres. Versailles is three times larger than the Biltmore Estate. They had 35,000 construction workers that it took to build it. 50 years it took to build it. It's a pretty big place, and it's a pretty cool building. Here's the tragedy. Louis XIV had unlimited money. He outlived his son. He outlived his grandson. He outlived his great-grandson. When he finally died, they gave the kingdom, read your history, to a 5-year-old heir of King Louis XIV. And the monarchy crumbled within a matter of years. You say, why? He was consumed with building a house, not building a home. My challenge to every one of you, maybe you or your kids are grown and gone. You got grandkids. Some of you got great grandkids. Do whatever you possibly can to point those kids toward Jesus.